Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Killer Psyche ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
A listener note, this episode contains adult content and is not suitable for everyone. Please be advised. My producer, Julie, and I, we talk a lot, almost every day. And guess what we talk about? Crime, what kind of stories to share with you. I have a lot of stories from my 20 years in the FBI, and I'm going to share one of them with you today. It was the first time I went undercover. From Wondery and Treefort, I'm Candace DeLong, and this is the second season of Killer Psyche. I've spent 5 decades studying people's minds through my work as an FBI profiler and psychiatric nurse. I've interviewed lots of murderers, including serial killers. And the question of why they did it is what I get asked time and time again. It is difficult to get a satisfying answer without diving deep into their mindsets. So that's what we're doing. And I will give you my best analysis in this series of what made them do what they did. This episode is my first time undercover.
As a Killer Psyche listener, you'll love Audible's new pulse-pounding collection of exclusive thrillers that are guaranteed to keep you on the edge of your seat. With captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances, their titles are brought to life. I recommend The Killer Across the Table by John Douglas, my mentor at the FBI Behavioral Science Unit, and his co-author, Mark Olshacker. It is great. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/psyche or text psyche to 500-500. That's audible.com/psyche or text psyche to 500-500. Killer Psyche is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
So one of the great things about working with an FBI agent, or a former FBI agent, I should say, is the fact that I get to hear all the great stories that Candace has to tell. And I'm going to make her tell one of my favorites right now. So Candace, let's talk about your first undercover assignment. I'm very excited because Candace has promised to tell me details that she has never told me before. And I'm just going to cheer gleefully or giggle gleefully when you get to them. So tell me about how early in your career did that happen? Like what happens? How do people get assigned a undercover assignment when you first get in the FBI?
Well, they're not actually assigned. Working undercover is strictly voluntary because, well, a lot of work that FBI agents do is dangerous, but being undercover is especially dangerous because you're tricking someone. You're pretending to be someone that you are not. And your intention is to collect evidence of crimes being committed or possibly will or being planned, will be committed, and stop it. And so if the target finds out you are an FBI agent, yikes, be a big problem. Hopefully you'll escape unscathed, but usually at best, the investigation's going to be compromised or stopped. I had only been in the Chicago division maybe a month. I got out of the academy at the end of October, and I was in the office. And in those days, I was assigned to a squad of the wire fraud. I'll explain that later in some other podcast, but if somebody is committing a crime, federal violation, and they use a telephone or something like that, a wire service, that makes it a federal crime and the feds can come in. It's a whole different set of charges. And I was on that squad. It's usually used for in white collar crimes. But I didn't really want to work on the wire fraud squad indefinitely. So I was kind of looking around. What new agents are encouraged to do is go around to the other squads and volunteer your services. Introduce yourself. Say, hey, I'm Candace DeLong. In those days, Candy. I'm Candy DeLong. I'm on the wire squad. If you have something interesting coming up, like an arrest or something, I'm available.
Do you think that because you were a woman, not a lot of those opportunities came to you at that time?
Yes. Not many. You had to go, the expression I use, you had to make your own music, not wait for something to come to you. In 1980, I think the office had 450, 500 agents and only 20 women at the time. And a lot of the guys, the men, they just had no use for women with guns. And, you know, I know
and
there was
the women with
one
guns
guy.
Probably didn't have a lot of use for them either. So it was an equal thing.
But there were two guys that recruited me. They knew me when I was head nurse at Northwestern, and they recruited me to be an FBI agent. And one of those agents, his name was Phil. And Phil decided to give me a break. He had been working undercover for a couple of years, and his target was the Chicago mob. And he was enmeshed in one group. So they think he's a bad guy, which is the purpose. And they were always throwing women at him. It's like, hey, Phil, you know, hey, my sister, she's a nice girl. You should take her out, you know, things like that. But the girls, the women that were being introduced to him, pushed on him, were mob connected as well. Now, a lot of people think, Julie, the fantasy is that FBI agents and other CIA agents working undercover, that of course they sleep with the target. Of course they mingle and have intimate. No. That's a good way to destroy the project, the investigation. Because later down the road, when it's in court, it's not going to look good for the FBI agent who is undercover on the witness stand, and the defense attorney says, and Mr. So-and-so, Agent So-and-so, did you have sex with the defendant? Juries don't like that. Prosecutors don't like that. So he was always kind of saying, no. And Phil was telling these guys, hey, I've got a regular girlfriend. I'm really into her. Sorry. Thanks, but no thanks.
So he came up to you. He wanted you to help him. What did he need you to help him with? I guess it's to be his girlfriend.
Yeah, it turns out, and this is a real knee slapper, he had to go to a banquet, a mob banquet.
No way.
Looked at him and yeah, I did.
Okay. All right.
I said, he came on my desk and told me this, and I said, a banquet? A mob banquet. They have banquets? Are they giving out awards? Are there going to be trophies? And he just laughed and he goes, well, I need a woman on my arm, because I've been deflecting their attempts to fix me up for quite a while. He said, you're going to be my steady girlfriend.
Wait, so you had to find something. I mean, you couldn't just go to the mob banquet in your uniform for the FBI. How did you do that? I don't think you had those kind of clothes back then.
My two-piece black suit with a nice blouse. No, I couldn't do that. So, well, first of all, just because he asked me to do it doesn't mean that was the end of it. I had to ask my supervisor. And of course, the best thing would be that he would ask the supervisor, hey, and he did. He said, hey, I know Candy DeLong. I've recruited her. I've got a thing to do tonight. I need a woman on my arm. Can she do it? And my supervisor said, sure, which I was excited. I wanted to do that. But I had nothing to wear.
No, why would you? Why would you?
Had to go shopping.
So I have to know, what does one wear to a mob banquet in the 80s? Please do tell.
Well, I use my imagination, and the federal offices in downtown Chicago are surrounded by huge department stores, some of them exquisite and pricey, some of them more mainstream. But they didn't really have anything that I thought would be appropriate. I didn't want to look too conservative. I didn't want any signal that I was anything other than a mobster's girlfriend. And I was walking up and down some streets, and I saw this boutique in one of them, not very big. And what was in the windows looked perfect. So I went in, tried on a few things, and I ended up, I'll never forget it. It was a black and white crepe two-piece suit. The top had like sparkly sequins on it, which I would never wear. And the skirt had, and this was the style back then, had slits up the side, the thighs, probably halfway up.
Wow.
And that was not unusual at that time.
I'm still trying to get over the vision of you in sequins and sparkles.
Wait, it gets better.
Okay.
Let's add some stiletto heels to that.
Oh.
And bad girl red lipstick, which I never wore red lipstick.
Amazing.
And then I had really long hair at the time, dark red hair. And so I ratted it up and it looked like a thundercloud. In those days, we called it angry hair. But that was the style back then.
You're making me envision Michelle Pfeiffer and Married to the Mob, you know, that look.
Yeah, kind of like that. Absolutely.
So you look in the mirror. Was there anything you recognized about yourself in the mirror that night?
My eyes. But they were heavily made up. I was so excited. I think my pulse was way up just getting dressed for the thing. It was so much fun. Julie, it's why I joined the Bureau.
Yeah, I was going
to
ask.
To have fun. Yeah, to have fun catching bad guys.
Did you imagine that was what you were going to do when you joined the Bureau, was dress up in this kind of suit?
No, absolutely not. All I could think of when I looked in the mirror was that my nursing school, St. Joseph College of Nursing, there was nothing I learned there that could have prepared me for this night.
Yeah, St. Joe didn't have a course on how to dress up like a mob mall. Is that what they're called? Mob
no,
mall?
No. Small Catholic nursing school. Nope, nothing about the mob there.
So did he come pick you up or did you meet him there? What happened?
Well, he picked me up. I heard the knock at the door. And of course, I knew it was him.
Oh my God, what did he say when he saw you?
I opened the door and he smiled and said, "Perfect. Perfect, Candy. You're supposed to be a dumb broad and now you look like one."
Oh dear, he couldn't say that nowadays.
No, he wasn't done. No, he wasn't done. He wasn't done. He said, "Now act like one. Can you do that?"
Oh.
And I thought, okay, I've got my marching orders. I look the part. Now I've got to play the part.
Wow. Were you excited? Were you nervous? Did you?
Well, when he called me a dumb broad, "Now act, you look like one, now act like one," I laughed. It was funny. It was a nervous laughter because, Julie, my heart was pounding. Combination of excitement and fear.
This was your first time undercover.
First time undercover. And in nurses training, you do every procedure with the guidance of a supervisor and you're taught, and then you do it once, you do it twice before you do anything alone so that you become very skilled and you do everything right and you never hurt a patient. This was different, quite a bit different.
So did you guys rehearse what you were going to say? Did you have a backstory? How did that happen?
Yeah, a little bit. First of all, he told me his undercover name was John. That's what the bad guys knew him as. And I thought, well, that's easy peasy. John is the most common male name in the entire world.
Right.
So easy. I'm not going to forget that. And one of the things about undercover work when choosing a name, don't wander too far afield from the truth. My middle name is Louise. So we decided that he would call me Lou, a truncation of Louise. And that would be my name for the night.
I don't know if I could remember to answer every time someone said, you know, Lou or whatever my middle name was, I think I'd be kind of spacing out. That must have been hard.
It is a little bit, but the what made it hard, Julie, was the excitement, which could also be interpreted as anxiety, good anxiety maybe, but you work with what you've got.
Killer Psyche is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up for spring, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself too thin. Whether you thrive around people or you prefer some more alone time, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that does not drain your battery. Your therapist can help you identify triggers and appropriate coping mechanisms so you can continue to build helpful habits. Plus, therapy can be beneficial for everyone, not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/psyche today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/psyche. Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe as ex-homicide detective Roy Freeman. Freeman is forced to piece together the brutal evidence from a decade-old murder investigation. With only instincts to trust, he faces a chilling truth. Sometimes it's best to let sleeping dogs lie. I'm really looking forward to this movie. I have interviewed some people that had a fractured mind regarding traumatic events. This is going to be good. Watch Sleeping Dogs now on digital. On sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
Okay, so John and Lou arrive at the banquet. You got to tell me, what does it look like? Is it a restaurant? Is it?
Have you ever been, yes, it was a banquet hall. Have you ever been to a huge wedding? Massive room, maybe 20 huge round tables with 8, 10 people at a table. Little centerpiece of flowers on each table, all set up. That's what it looked like.
They had centerpieces? I'm sorry. This is amazing to me. How many people were there?
Oh, probably a couple hundred.
Was there food? Was it good food, at least?
Oh, well, you know. Banquet food, how good ever is banquet food? It's better these days than it was back in 1980 when I did this. The expression back then was, oh, you're a banquet? Oh, did you enjoy the rubber chicken?
Oh, that's so disappointing because, you know, after having watched Goodfellas and The Godfather and watching them cook, you just imagine that something is going to be amazing when you go eat with the mob.
It probably would have been an amazing Italian meal if I'd gone to one of their homes.
Right.
But no, this was the banquet. I couldn't wait for the award ceremony.
I was just trying to imagine the stereotype, what that would be. Okay, so you guys get to the banquet. Do you go sit together? How does it work?
Yes, of course. We were at a table, a big round table. And so pretty much you can see everybody's face that you're dining with. And John was next to his mob buddy. I was on one side of him, and to my left was the wife of the mob buddy, and she knew John. And that was the deal that it was. And it was just chit-chat, just nothing exciting. How you doing? How's the weather? How about those Bears and those Cubbies? You know, Chicago's really into their sports stuff.
How long had John been undercover with them?
He had been undercover at least 2 years.
Wow.
Undercover projects that are targeting a, what we call ongoing criminal enterprise, it's got to go slow. Do undercover things sometimes go down real fast? Yes. And there'll be more stories for me down the road about that. But for something like this, to infiltrate the Chicago organized crime syndicate, that's not something that is done quickly. It takes patience and skill and more patience and more patience, because it takes a long time for your target to trust you. And usually it's a situation where somebody, it's not uncommon how this happens, that somebody, let's say that's a part of a criminal enterprise, is arrested and they are charged with the crime. Wouldn't be unusual for FBI interviewing that person. They say, look, you know, maybe you could introduce me to get into your organization, like introduce me as an old friend, and we'll hold back on your prosecution and see how that goes. And, you know, it's kind of a quid pro quo. You scratch my back and we'll maybe help you with your prosecution, not be so, instead of looking at 50 years in prison, maybe only 20. But this is what we want you to do.
So when you're undercover, like he was, do you have to have a different place that you live? Are most of those agents that go undercover, are most of them single? Like, is it completely devoted to just that storyline?
Good question. There is something called deep cover, D-E-E-P, deep cover. And when somebody is under deep cover, they are not living at their home. They're not going into the office. They live the personality and lifestyle of the undercover individual they are pretending to be. And it has to be that way, or it would be dangerous.
Was that what Philip, John, Phil, I don't even know what to call him now. Was that what he was doing?
Right. He was definitely undercover, but...
because he talked to you at the office.
That is my memory, that he was in the office. Now, he didn't go into the office on a daily basis. Undercover agents do not go into the office on a daily basis. If they're in deep cover, they don't go into the office at all. And they have what's called a contact agent who meets with them on a regular basis to debrief them, to get the information that they have acquired and get it back into the system in the office, that kind of thing.
Okay, let's go back to the story. You're in this banquet hall, you're sitting at the table with John and all of the heads of the mob. What happens then? Do you hear any juicy gossip? How do you guys play it?
I don't recall the conversation during dinner. I was just kind of smiling and looking around, taking it all in. Nobody was really talking with me. Phil/John was talking with the mob guys. And then there was one point. The guys at our table get up and they walk away going somewhere. Maybe they were all going to smoke cigars. I don't know. But I suddenly found myself alone with four mob guys' wives at the table.
All right. I got to hear about this.
Well, they had met Phil/John. They knew him for years. And he was always, you know, they'd say, hey, I'd like you to meet my sister or whatever. And no, I got a girlfriend. Well, now I'm her. I'm the phantom girlfriend. And they wanted to know all about my relationship with John.
Gosh, how'd you do that? Because you didn't know everything he had told them. I mean, that must have been...
No, it was...
frightening, right?
I didn't know. And I didn't want to fabricate a story or a history with John that he might inadvertently contradict. And that would be bad. So I started going on and on about my relationship with John and how much I loved him. And I even envisioned a wedding someday. And I was just kind of going on and on about, oh, it's going to be wonderful. I love him so much, blah, blah, blah. And then the woman that was next to me looked at me and said, why did you call him Phil?
Oh, God. Oh, goodness.
That's a big oh, God. I was aghast. I thought my heart was going to stop. You know, it was for just a few moments, Julia had tunnel vision. The only thing I could see was my glass of water on the table. And it might have been my imagination that all conversation in the entire banquet hall ceased. That didn't happen. It felt like it. But I can tell you, there was nothing nothing fake about the fear and horror that gripped me. It's like, oh my God, what have I done?
What, did she look suspicious or was she just confused?
She looked confused. She had a confused look on her face, but I had the feeling, the gut reaction, I have to tell her something. She's curious. She's looking at me. She's married to a criminal. I just called someone Phil that she knows is John. What the heck is going on here?
So what did you do? What did you tell her?
I said, oh my gosh. I put my hand up to my child. Oh my gosh, please don't tell him I said that. Phil is my ex. And if John knew I ever even thought about him, he beat the crap out of me.
That was quick thinking, Candace. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Good lie. You normally don't lie, well, so that's a good lie. What did she buy it?
She did. In fact, Julie, she didn't doubt it, my story. She didn't doubt it for a minute. She leaned over, put her hand on my lower arm that was on the table, patted it, and she said, "Don't worry, honey." And she said it knowingly while she was patting my arm. She looked me in the eyes and she said, "It's okay. Your secret's safe with me."
Well, that's nice of her. You have to admit, that's a pretty cool thing.
Right. Of course, later thinking about it, I thought, oh, how come she's so knowledgeable about another man in her life?
Or so knowledgeable about what would happen to her if she mentioned another man in her life, I think would be more the question.
Exactly.
And I don't think it's a question at all, honestly, Candace, do you? I think she knew.
Probably not. Probably not.
I think she knew. So did John come back in? Did all the men come back in? How does that work?
Well, they hadn't come in yet. And so here I was. I was still kind of in a state of shock, despite the fact that this mob wife had comforted me, that she understood my plight. But I thought, until I calmed down, the thoughts going through my head were terrible. I thought Phil and I were going to be discovered as being FBI agents and we would be shot right then and there. And then our bodies would be thrown in the dumpsters behind the banquet hall. That's how far my imagination went.
That is scary, though. I mean, anyone who's watched any mob film from the 70s on knows, like, feels that is a possibility.
And I also thought that I had a profound fear that I had destroyed the two-year-long undercover operation that Phil had been on. I didn't know for sure she would not tell her husband, "Hey, that girlfriend of John's called him Phil. What do you think that means?" I had no idea. And I thought, I probably have destroyed a two-year-long FBI investigation into the mob. And so I thought I would rightfully be fired from the FBI. So my career was definitely would have short-lived, you know, 4 months at the academy and 6 weeks in the office. I'm gone. How was I going to explain that to my family? And could I get my job back as head nurse at Northwestern? These things all ran through my head.
Maybe if you wore your outfit that you wore to the banquet to go to your job interview for Northwestern, they'd say, absolutely, you're hired.
But see, here's the thing. Being fired from the FBI, that's something that will follow you the rest of your life and probably keep you from getting good jobs. It's just the way it is. Nevertheless, after about 10 minutes, my pulse finally started slowing down a little bit. And the wife leaned over to me and she said, "I understand. It's okay. It's okay." So I thought, maybe I skated on this one. And Phil came back to the table. Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, John came back to the table with his guy. And we got up and we left.
Okay. So did you tell him?
Well, not at first. I knew I had to tell him because he could get hurt. He could be discovered. I didn't know the wife was going to keep her mouth shut. I hoped that she would. So when we were in his car and finally away from all the mobsters, I confessed my mistake, like I was a bad, bad child, done something wrong. I was half expecting him to kick me to the curb, or at least to chastise me. Or, you know, I was hoping he'd yell at me. It would make me feel better. But you know what he did, Julie?
No.
He laughed. He laughed the whole thing off.
That's good.
I was, once again, not for the first time in the evening, I was stunned, but I was happy stunned. And he said, oh, that happens all the time. Don't worry about it. People hardly notice stuff like that. And then they forget about it right away. Years later, years and years, decades later, I realized why that is the case. You've heard the expression, we see what we want to see, we hear what we want to hear. For these mob people to seriously think, did she say that? Did I hear what she said correctly? And if she has called this guy by a different name, maybe that is his real name. We have misjudged him. We are criminals. He's been living among us. He might not be who we think he is. And if that's the case, we've got a big problem on our hands. And I'm thinking, we're both going to die.
Obviously, you didn't die. Thank goodness. Otherwise, you know, you'd never have met me. And that's what's really important here.
I can laugh about it now, but just retelling the story, Julie, and this happened 40 years ago. Just retelling the story, I can feel my pulse. You know, I'm smiling and I'm laughing, but that's because it all went well. But I'm sitting at the microphone here going, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, that was a close one.
Did he tell everybody what you did?
I don't know. Nobody ever said another word to me. Well, he did recruit me. So if he told everybody what an idiot I was, that wouldn't reflect on him very well, would it?
No, no, probably not.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
So was he worried that the woman would tell them something? Was he concerned at all?
No, he was pretty C3, cool, calm, and collected about the whole thing, which is a good characteristic to have if you're working undercover in the mob and you're an FBI agent. So, in fact, not only was he not worried, Julie, he actually approved of the way I recovered from the slip-up. I mean, maybe didn't approve, but he liked what I said. And then he said, and I'll never forget this, he said, Candy, that story, that's something I can pick up on. And I said, well, what do you mean? He goes, well, every now and then when I'm out with them, I'll just have to mention that I have to slap you around once in a while. And we both laughed.
Do you think he did that? He probably did, right?
Oh, I have no doubt that he did. I have no doubt that he did. And I think he kept our secret safe until I just told gazillions of people.
all because I asked you to, too. So you can he can thank
exactly.
me for that as well. I'm not sure, by the way, that it was a good thing to mention cool, calm, and collected when you're talking about an FBI agent, but I'm going to leave that up to you.
Well, if you're working undercover anyway.
Yeah.
I think probably, I mean, it was 1981. That was 41 years ago. About half, if not more, of the people in that banquet hall, the bad guys in the banquet hall, are resting in so-called peace right now.
So, what came out of his time undercover? Did anything come out of his time undercover?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a success story, despite my efforts to tank the whole thing. Phil pulled it out. And it went on to be a successful prosecution and bad guys went to prison.
Great.
Yay.
Well, good job. Good work.
Thank you.
Candace, I love your stories. I love them, love them, love them. I can't even say love them. I love them.
You're so emotional. You can't even say it.
I'm so emotional. I wanted to tell everybody, I'm kind of excited about this as well. Your book is coming back out, right? You have a second edition?
It is back out.
Yeah.
Second edition of my book, Special Agent, My Life on the Front Lines as a Woman in the FBI. And there's more about this story with Phil, and there's a lot more stories.
I think you can get it on Amazon. Am I correct?
You absolutely can.
Okay.
Make sure to get second edition. It's got more in it than the first one.
And of course, there is even more when you listen to Killer Psyche podcasts.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, Candace, this is fun. Thanks for filling me in on all those details that you haven't shared with me before. I appreciate that. I'm sure we'll have more of these to come.
We will. And every time I talk about it, I remember more and more details that I thought were buried forever.
And yet here I am with the shovel. Well, happy holidays, everybody. Have a great holiday, and we will see you after the new year.
Absolutely. Cheers, everybody. Stay safe. Lock your doors.
Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Killer Psyche ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery and Treefort Media, this is Killer Psyche. I'm your host, Candace DeLong. This episode was written and produced by Lisa Ammerman and Julie Burke. Story research and additional writing by Ann Liu. Mix and sound design by Joshua Morales. Senior audio producer, Maxwell Carney. Head of audio, Tom Monahan. Renee Levesque is our production manager. Lindsay Whistler, Colin Modell, and Jada Williams are production assistants. Oscar Guido is the producer from Treefort Media. From Amazon Music and Wondery, the producer is Stephanie Joaquin. And the co-executive producer is Julie Burke. Lastly, our executive producers are Kelly Garner and Lisa Ammerman for Treefort, and Marshall Louie and Aaron O'Flaherty for Wondery. The series is produced by Wondery and Treefort Media.
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower.
Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.